It's Alex here. This episode of Content Briefly is brought to you by Gage. Before I joined Superpath, I was running growth marketing at a B2B SaaS company. About a year ago, we started noticing more leads self-reporting that they found us through AI search. But all of our lead traffic from AI search was going to just one of our products. That's when we brought in Gage. Our team had a lot on our plate. What I love most is that Gage helped us identify the top priority actions to take, the third-party sites feeding significant citation share, and the page structure tweaks that would make a difference. With limited time spent on our end, Gage helped one of our products move from not showing up at all to the top 15 within a few months. Real MQL started coming in. Full transparency, Gage was actually one of the first companies I reached out to when I started doing partnerships for Superpath. I've already referred half a dozen people to them before this became official because the product just worked so well for us. The reality is, search is shifting. Fewer clicks, more AI answers. If you're not showing up when someone asks ChatGPT what's the best tool for X, you're invisible to a growing chunk of your audience. Gage is offering Superpath members a free AI visibility report, basically a 30-minute assessment of where you currently stand, plus 50% off your first 3 months. You can book that in the show notes below. Thanks so much, and enjoy Content Briefly. All right, it is Alex and Eric here. We're going to be switching up some of the hosting duties over the next few months, more of kind of like an experimentation here and just availability of the team. Chloe will be back shortly. She's out this week on a work trip, but we'll be just kind of switching up the host a little bit. So excited to jump in and talk to Eric. One thing that I loved, Eric's content predictions going into 2026. I think he shared those maybe a month ago. And one thing that stood out to me that I definitely resonated with was the freelancer niche explosion. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. So Eric,
the good kind of explosion, for the record, not the bad kind of explosion. I'll start with a dumb anecdote, but one company I worked at, every time I said like explosion in the sense of like, you know, the rocket ship kind, there's this one guy, I can't even remember what his role was, but he was like on some team and he's like, it's not an explosion, it's like a takeoff or something. And he edited out, like he wasn't in marketing, but he edited my work every time. And I was like, no, people say explosion this way in startup land. It's okay. Don't worry. It's fine.
Don't rockets take off with an explosion, right?
Yeah. It's the good kind of, it's like the boom and then the takeoff. Yeah. That's the kind of explosion we're talking about here, to be
exactly
clear.
Okay. So that explosion you had written, new freelance micro specializations proliferate, citing examples like LinkedIn ghostwriters, podcast clip editors, AI prompt writers, and newsletter writers instead of traditional blog writers. And I think we've had some similar experiences here. And so that's what we wanted to talk to today. We are both coming from kind of the startup context. And always when we're doing that, we have to put that note up top that some of these trends might not be, especially if larger companies, like some of those spaces might look a little bit different. But I think we had some similar experiences that we wanted to talk to, acknowledging that neither of us are freelancers, but we kind of wanted to approach this from the in-house side as people who have both kind of experienced this hiring freelancers in the past few years.
Yeah, if you are a freelancer, if you are a freelancer, consider this like your market research done for you. All you have to do is listen to the next 30 minutes and then all of your wildest business dreams will come true.
Yeah.
So I'll start by talking about kind of the way things used to be. So I think typically, I mean, let's say 10 years ago, the typical startup marketing team would have been almost completely in-house, right? You would have had some sort of content leader, you would have a writer, you'd have a designer, maybe SEO, web developer, like let's say something like 5 people at least, or 3 to 5 people at the very starter. And then I think over the last 10 years, really, the content teams have started to shrink. Like in some cases, in a lot of cases, down to one person or even a one-person marketing team. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Maybe let's just get into that right away. I think some of it was de-risking. I know you were talking about layoffs before. You want to just jump right into that because you gave me that example.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of these things, and anybody that was kind of in the startup world over the past maybe 5 years knows the kind of 2021, 2022 era, a lot of startups got a lot of money and hired bunches of people that the economy on startups at least flipped in late 2022 and 2023. And so we had this big boom in hiring and this big bust. And I still think there are a lot of things
in my mind, in the startup world that are still tied to this thing that happened a few years ago. And I see that a lot of teams are wary of hiring lots of full-time people again, even when they do raise a lot of money. They're saying, hey, can we be a little bit more flexible? And because what really sucks is when you hire somebody and have all these great plans and you have to let them go a year or a year and a half later when kind of the dynamics change. So that's got a huge influence here.
Totally. And I guess another thing to mention about the old model of marketing and content specifically is that it was almost all text, right? You had it was copywriting, blog writing, emails, maybe a bit of social media writing, but it was almost all text. Like SEO was the big thing that we're all focused on.
You always had people that were like, oh, we should be doing more video. Like we should, yeah. We should think about that more.
We've all been saying that for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was almost all writing before. So typically you'd have like an in-house team, or in this kind of more recent model that's been really common. And what I've done at Doc is like, I was hired at Doc as content lead and they're like, okay, you're going to be the only marketer, but we want you to like spin up the SEO program first. And so basically the first thing I did is I hired like 10 freelance writers to more or less like one blog post each per month. And most of my job was just managing those freelance writers. So I was writing briefs, I was giving them assignments. And I think that was like the typical model. If you go back and listen to all the episodes of Superpath from 2020 to 2022, that's what most of content leaders would have been working on. And like writing was the skill. And that's where like especially during like COVID times, there was this huge positive explosion of B2B blog writing freelancers. Like it went from being hard to find them to there being thousands of folks because the demand was so high. And like, that's just the way things worked out. And so I think that was like, I think we're not out of that completely, but I'd say like that was kind of like the old model of the in-house freelancer content relationship for like mostly until now. And then I think like what's changed recently, like we said, the in-house teams have gotten a lot leaner. So like smaller headcount, it's mostly just like senior in-house people. There's like fewer junior generalists in-house these days, I think. So the typical model is now like a few senior generalists who have a lot on their plate. And I guess the big shift that's happened, of course, is then AI has made like the writing task that's on our plate a little easier. And so, you know, stop me because I'm on a rant here. But I think basically like I'll just share where I'm at Doc right now, which is so we've got our blog, we've got our website. I'm in charge of other marketing things now too, like events, we have social, et cetera. And the easiest thing for me to like outsource to AI now has been writing. So now I can it's easier for me to outsource a blog to AI. It's still not easy for me to outsource making a video, as much as all the video tools like to claim that's possible. I still haven't had a lot of success with like the AI video tools. You know, going out and building backlinks, that's still not something that I can do with AI. Having like a great Reddit strategy, there's this very long list of tasks that like I'm expected to manage as an in-house content leader or marketing leader that I can't do easily with in-house. I can't do easily with AI. And so like now I have this big need for freelancers and specialists who can kind of like come in and plug these gaps as experiments and just sort of like plug and play into our marketing program. And exactly like you said, I want them to come in, test out a channel and say like, oh, should we be doing Reddit? I know, I'll bring in like the smartest Reddit freelancer I know. They'll spin something up for us and then we'll test that as a channel. And then maybe someday we'll hire in-house, or maybe we'll just stick with that freelancer forever. So where I'm going with this is it's been the snowball effect where now I think the default state of freelancing will look less like everybody is a freelance blog writer, and it will look more like I am a newsletter specialist. I am a Reddit strategist. I am a B2B demo video expert. Like I'm an on-screen creator that can make all of your Instagram content. I think that's where we're going now, where we'll see all these very small niches emerge. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like we've had similar experiences. So I'm speaking a little bit to my past time at an HR tech startup where I worked the past few years. And it was just really interesting to see this transition from, like, we had a very standard marketing department, standard content team. Actually, at one point had 4 or 5 people on the content team, in-house video person, and then worked with freelance writers and an agency too, I believe. And kind of went through like some shifts in the structure of the team over several years. And what I really saw rebuilding, especially in the past couple of years, was we solidified like the people that were full-time on the team became more generalists. And so this is actually like the role I played too, is I was like, by the time I left, I was like full generalist marketer that just like working across everything that we were doing in marketing, running experiments and then running the things that we were doing really well and that kind of had a process to them. And we started to, as we grew, this is actually where maybe one point that's a little bit different from your experience. We actually did hire a junior marketer to come in and help out too. So we kind of had a team of like 3 or 4 generalist marketers full time. And then we started to pick out some freelance spaces, kind of like your experience, where we wanted to experiment a little bit more. So a lot of times, like I was starting the experiments myself. So a good example is like I started LinkedIn ghostwriting for our founder, and we were kind of testing it out, testing the waters of like, can we make this work at all? Got to kind of a certain level. And it's like, you know, I'm working on 12 programs at once. There's only so far I can take this thing. Let's go hire a LinkedIn ghostwriter who knows this space really well. And we kind of did that for several other things too, like paid media, brought in a specialist there too. And so, and that's kind of the strategy that we built on from there, was just like these in-house generalists who like understand the business really well, can operate at a like 101, 201 level on all of these things. Maybe they have, I mean, this is back to kind of like the T-shaped marketer, like maybe a specialist, like people came from different backgrounds and there's a few things they can do really well, but like they can hold down a bunch of stuff. And then if it's something that you don't do really well, that is starting to work, bring on that kind of niche freelancer. And this is just something I see as a kind of, to your point, a huge opportunity. And every time I'm talking to freelancers, I'm like, there's like, I would have loved to, you know, there's not a huge market for a lot of these folks right now. And if you had been like, hey, I'm an HR tech LinkedIn ghostwriter, I know HR tech really well, and I know LinkedIn ghostwriting really well, like, boom, you would have been hired like right away, right? And that just stand like, it's those sorts of gaps that I think there's going to be really big opportunities to be like, what can my niche be that can kind of fill these gaps, knowing that teams are more generalist now. And there's just like just so many new opportunities. And I mean, the other thing that I think is driving this is something that we've talked about a lot is marketing teams are changing a lot. The skills, the tools are changing. As an in-house person, I only have so much time to dedicate to like learning how to do this thing, to like learning the LinkedIn algorithm, or to like learning how to do a, you know, build an AI content ops system. And so leaning on people that are spending their whole day focused on these things that are changing a lot and partnering with them, I think is a huge opportunity for teams. Like I always felt like I was running behind because things were changing so fast. And I just
totally,
you know, had to run all the programs that we were running and didn't have time to like learn everything. Right.
Yeah. Right before this call, I was reflecting on like 10 years ago, let's say, all you had to know to be a good employee was how to use Microsoft Office or like Google Docs, right? It was like, do you know how to make a slide deck? Do you know how to make a document? And can you type quickly? And to be a marketer, like, and maybe some light design skills. And then like Canva came around and that was pretty easy. But now you kind of are expected to know, again, video editing, AI workflows, probably some ops type things, like, you know, how to set up automations of the CRM, something like that. Like, so the T-shape has gotten like super wide, super fast. And all that does, which I'm basically repeating what you just said in a different way, but that now we're all stretched like super, super thin on the wide part of the T. And those of us who are in-house really need freelancers to come in with the specializations, who are a different kind of T than us, who can like plug those gaps.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, one of the things is just like the risk too. Like I have so much time in a day to learn. And like, what if I spent all that time for 6 months learning this thing that was like, hey, we got like, let's continue to use the LinkedIn ghostwriting example. Like, hey, there were like some early signs of success here. Okay. I went all in and all my experimentation time went for 6 months towards that. And you know what? After 9 months, we were like, this isn't really a fit for us, or we see this changing directions, like that's a huge waste of my time to like have gone down that path versus if we had brought on a freelancer. And like that, it just makes more sense from our own company resources standpoint when everything's changing so fast to not have to develop out that total expertise there.
Yeah, totally. Maybe let's look forward facing now and talk about like what is, if you're a freelancer listening to this, I guess, or if you're an in-house person listening to this, but let's focus on freelancers. Like what is the path forward in terms of, okay, let's say you used to be B2B blog writer, or you still are, and you're listening to this, and we're not saying like B2B blog writing will go away. There's still lots of companies that need that kind of help. But if you're like dipping your toes in the water on some other kind of niche, like what kind of advice do you have for those folks?
Yeah, I think I would just start, and you hear this a lot in the Super Bass Bro community in our freelancer channels, but folks are starting to experiment a little bit more with their offerings. And so you can be like, hey, here's my core offering, but like here are, and I always weave parallels. Like I was in the HR tech world for a long time, and a lot of similar things are happening in the HR world. Like we have a lot of people operations folks that have gone fractional, have gone freelance, and they're trying to figure out like what their specialties are as well. They're like, oh, I'm going to specialize in compensation. So I've gotten to see this over like a 5-year perspective on that crew of people. And there's some people that have been really successful in that, like, you know, they start out as, you know, something more traditional of like, I'm just a fractional head of people for startups, which is, okay, similar to like being the core base thing for, you know, write content for blogs as a content marketer. But then they start to be like, oh, but I have this like side specialty. And like, in this year, I'm going to start exploring this like very niche positioning and seeing, can I like upsell one or two of my clients on that very specific thing? And then you could look, some of these people like 2 to 3 years later, that becomes their whole thing, right? And so I think it comes down to just in your offering, being always open to experimenting. Like some things are going to stick and some things aren't, but just being able to like be willing to take a step outside of kind of the comfort zone of the core offering and say like, what is something just super, super specific? And, you know, it depends on how many clients you're working with, but potentially, you know, starting with the clients you have already, seeing if you can upsell them or just like listening to them and trying to find those gaps that they have that maybe they don't talk to you about because they never thought about that with you because you already have like an established working relationship. But like, can you find those gaps? Can you squeeze into them with the clients and then use that to kind of create this sort of secondary experiment positioning and kind of niche that you could potentially go into in the long run?
Yeah, absolutely. You made me think of, I was talking to Jenna Potter in our community the other day in Superpath. And I think she's right now, she's doing like product videos for companies.
Yeah.
Also AI workflows as like a whole separate niche, and then like content writing. And there's like 3 or 4 or 5 niches that she's found. So there's kind of like, you can go like horizontally across one company and be like, oh, you have these needs. I understand your product now. I understand the offering. I can also do videos. Do you want me to make you a video? I can also do XYZ. And then there's the other way too, where it's like, okay, I've got this one offering. Like I've made a AI workflow for Reddit and I'm just going to go shop that around to as many companies as possible. And then you get your foot in the door on the Reddit thing. And then you can go, oh, by the way, I also make product videos. So I think like there's kind of a sales advantage, let's say, of like getting your foot in the door. Because I think for being a freelancer, especially in my experience at Doc, like bringing on a freelancer is so much more work than getting an existing freelancer to expand their scope, right?
Oh,
like
for sure.
I have to like just the logistics of like, you got to put your billing details into Ramp and like, I have to onboard you and I have to explain what Doc is, like the idea of doing that again. The whole reason I'm hiring freelancers is to not waste my own time, basically, right? And so any time that I can save time is a huge win for me. And so the smartest freelancers I've worked with have always said, like, by the way, I noticed that you're slow at this thing. Can I help you? Like, I also do that. So I think just being loud with your clients about the other services you're offering, like, I'm never going to be upset if you email me and say, by the way, I also do Reddit now. Do you need help with Reddit? Like that would never offend me. That would only be helpful to me. So I think like being noisy to your existing clients is a good place to start too.
That's so true. Like bringing on a new freelancer versus somebody that you already have, like you've got that established relationship and it's so much easier. Like there are probably so many things that the in-house marketing team's thinking about being like, we don't have any expertise in this. And if you're just somebody that's already in the systems pitching us on this, like there's only upside for you.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, for sure.
I think also like this advice to freelancers to niche down has always been interesting to me. I think like the better advice is like knowing when to niche down and when to experiment, which is kind of what you were saying. It's like, don't pigeonhole yourself to like one industry or one workflow, but then like keep, like if you find someone that's working well, then like niche down, but don't like keep feelers out for what's interesting or like what you're passionate about. Because I think there's always, you can kind of like link your way to new opportunities by following your gut a little bit. So it's like knowing when to say yes, knowing when to say no, like that's a skill in of itself where I think will make a huge difference here.
Yeah. I think in the long run here, kind of taking even a broader view looking forward, like I'm very optimistic about, I think I'm like pretty bullish on the next 10 years and more freelancer opportunities. And this comes from, I still think I'm very influenced by like past few years and how teams have been just so much more hesitant than in the past to hire full-time folks, but you know, just as much work needs to be done. And so like, I continue to be really, really excited about the freelancer opportunities moving forward. I just think they might look a little bit different maybe than they did in the last era.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I think so too. I think my other Alex boss, I report to two Alexes now, at Doc was like, is this just like the best time in history to be a content marketer? And I thought it was such a funny question because I think like half of content marketers are feeling that way. And then the other half are having kind of an existential crisis of like the old way is changing and that's a little scary, which I totally empathize with. But I'm definitely in the excitement bucket. And I think the proliferation of tools, content formats, like only creates opportunity because I don't see the world where like the generalist can do all of these things amazingly well. Like I'm not amazing. I know like Instagram as a user, but at this point, like I cannot make Instagram reels at the speed and pace and fluency of like a 20-year-old with their iPhone. And like, if I were going to be spinning up a serious Instagram strategy at Doc, I'd just like hire a 20-year-old off the street who's really good at Instagram. You know what I mean? So I think like every time the formats, like new formats keep coming up, keep changing, all the algorithms change, like it's so much easier just to bring in someone who knows. So I think like that creates so much exciting opportunity for different types of marketing roles that didn't exist before. And then, yeah, and opportunities to pivot for people who are like air quotes, just writers right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the, you're touching on it there. Like the thing that I see is the big opportunity is like when things are changing that fast, the kind of leverage turns to the people that are able to just throw themselves into it. Like you think about like the newest AI development or tool that just came out that like, if you're an in-house person, you're being like, oh my gosh, this new thing just came out. I already have like three times the amount of work. Like, where am I finding time to figure out how to do this and make sure we don't fall, you know, if this is the next big thing, like make sure we don't fall behind competitors. As a freelancer, you can be like, I'm just going to throw half my time, you know, into learning this new thing and can just become an expert really fast in it. And so I think that's exactly where the opportunity is. I remember being like sitting down and being like, okay, here's the, it was truly a dozen different things I was working on and trying to run. And, you know, some of them I was sitting there looking at like, this thing is changing a lot right now. And I am able to dedicate 3 hours a month to it. How are we going to build something that is effective if like I'm the only person working on it? And it's just like those 3 hours are going towards execution, not how do we take two steps ahead on this thing? So that's just where I think the power of partnering with a freelancer who can just like have, you know, they bring the expertise of like being able to adapt really quickly and understand these tools and spend some time in a way that the in-house teams can't.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe let's finish this up by flipping it back to in-house teams, because I think like as me, as a content leader, I'm thinking like, what does the future look like in terms of my relationship with freelancers? And I think, I mean, Jimmy has always said this. It was one of the first lessons I got from him. It was like being able to identify and manage and work with freelancers is probably like the number one skill or agencies, which we haven't even talked about in this conversation, but the whole other topic. But it's probably the number one skill for a content leader or a marketing leader is like your ability to manage your own time and resources and attention and project manage others. Like it's not necessarily in the tools, in the weeds. It's like strategy and then managing people to help you. Like, and so I think like the advice I'm trying to take for myself is like, don't try to be a master of, like, don't become a master of none. Like stay, like stick with that like T shape where you're really comfortable. So for me, that's like automating systems and coming up with a strategy, but then not spending, you know, one third of my week being a like D-level video editor. And so I think this is like the call to in-house people too, is like all these people are out there who are specialists that can help you. And, you know, the best use of your time and budget is probably to outsource more than you think.
Yeah. And that's a whole interesting skill set. Like I actually had not managed too many freelancers until like the past couple of years. And it's just very different ballgame than managing in-house people, because just having to deal with like, how do we, you know, structure this person's limited time, and how do we like set up communication structures that work well for us? And yeah, a lot of respect. Now having done that with a handful of people, I'm very impressed with anybody that manages a large group of freelancers, because that's, it's a tricky thing itself.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a whole other show. Now we have another topic.
Well, cool. I think that maybe does it here. It'll be interesting to see how things change over time. But if you're a freelancer, would love to hear what you're hearing from the ground as well. I know lots of these kinds of conversations are happening in the Superpath Pro Slack community right now.
All right. Thanks, Alex. And thanks, everyone, for listening today to another episode of Content Briefly. And we can't wait to be back in your ear holes again soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Eric.